accession number 32369, reel number 9.
Oh, it worked. Oh.
Yeah, it was well after 12 when
Mr. Cassidy, reel 9. What date did you leave Berlin?
We left Berlin in 1963, and for a lot of, especially for myself, it was our first venture abroad, and we'd knitted into the battalion. We'd settled down into what our roles were going to be in the battalion, and of course I was in the mortar platoon, which thoroughly enjoyed, and we'd also incorporated our stature in the battalion itself, coming from there, from the depot as a raw recruit. We were now in the family of the Durham Light Infantry, where we'd mixed with the old and the new, i.e. the old was the back end of the national servicemen who were still there. Now, we had been mixed with the ones who had actually re-signed again. So we had the veteran part of the Durham Light Infantry as well, plus the regulars who had been with the battalion for a number of years as well. So we came back fully fledged Durham Light Infantrymen, all looking forward to our first leave, for myself anyway, since I joined. And we left in 63, and we got the plane back to Newcastle Airport to be going straight on leave from there.
What leave did they give you?
We got 2 weeks leave, which was a long time then, and I remember it being, well, you know, what we want to do, we're making arrangements with the other guys, we'll meet on so-and-so date and we'll go and have a few drinks here and there. But of course, I mean, we're all from the County Durham area, so we knew we were going to bump into each other somewhere or other anyway. But our minds were firmly fixed on the enjoying the fortnight's leave anyway. And of course, we'd heard that our next big post was going to be Hong Kong.
How did you feel about that?
Long
way.
Well, yes, we knew it was a long way off. We knew there was Chinese there, but we, we didn't really know what to expect. And of course, all our minds, well, being a youngster, still young then, were just focused on leave and enjoying ourselves. And I always remember the biggest, one of the mistakes it was my first mistake since joining the army, was that one, was reading the reporting back instructions to Barnet Castle. And I had the date fixed in my mind, and I knew we had to be back on a certain date by 12 o'clock. And of course, it wasn't until a day before we were due to be going back to camp, and I'd said to my family, oh, it's okay, we've got plenty of time to get back to Barnet Castle, I'll get the bus there. I haven't got to be there till 12 o'clock at night, so I've got all afternoon, all day. So, of course, little did I know then, well, it suddenly dawned on us when I said, oh, was it 12 o'clock at dinner time or 12 o'clock at night time? And luckily, I did bump into somebody just the day before I was going to go back. And he said, no, it's 12 o'clock midday when you've got to be reported back. And I said, oh, well, that puts a different kettle of fish on it altogether, because I'll have to make new arrangements for getting there, because I was scheduled up for going at 12 o'clock at night, and I had a lift and everything arranged. So luckily, we got back for 12 o'clock lunchtime on the day when we got there. But it was nice to get back as well. We did for the fortnight's leave, which was our first leave, was taken in with seeing the family, friends, having a good time, going to drinks, going to nightclubs, listening to our favourite music, going and seeing a few pop groups and everything, and it went over very, very quickly. And before long, we were trudging with our suitcases up to Barney Castle, where I knew I'd been there once before, I think, in my school days, but that was all. And Barney Castle was just a few Nissen huts in a countryside place, and we said, oh dear.
Big change from Montgomery Barracks.
Yes, big change. But it was okay. I mean, the worst things we got was if we were on guard duty or anything, because we knew it was within striking distance of being able to get home on a weekend. And they always said, you know, if you're not on duty on a weekend, then there's no reason why you can go home as long as you get back early, you know, in time for parade on Monday morning. So apart from that, we kept our noses clean and didn't make sure we didn't get confined to barracks or had any jankers or anything like that to do. The only thing that stopped us was being on guard duty. And even then, there was sometimes where if you had enough money in your pocket, you could get yourself out of that as well, because you could pay somebody else to do your duty for you. And that happened on occasions as well. But on the whole, we were introduced to life at Barnard Castle. And we were well welcomed in the town. I mean, it was a walk from the camp to into the town centre of Barnard Castle. But we used to do it. It always was better walking back than what it was getting there, you know. But we quite a lot of you know, pubs in Barnard Castle, they were pleased to see us. Well, they were for the first few weeks anyway, because I think we tried to drink the town dry, and almost did. In some occasions, some of the pubs were drank dry, you know, when we were all out together. And but on the whole, we had a good time, you know.
Which particular camp were you in? Did it have a name?
I think it was Streetland Camp, Streetland. And it was up. I didn't realise there was a station there anyway. And they said, yeah, there's a little train station down there, which we found out when we disembarked from there when we went to Hong Kong. But there's a little train station there. There was married quarters there as well. And Barnard Castle was just Nissan huts spread out on farmer's land, and we were told, and a lot of sheep. In fact, some of the sheep used to come into the Nissan huts, you know, if the door was left open. But like I said, the main duties were the centre on guard duty. Otherwise, we did a bit what is known now as a riot train, and this was to get us in fettle for Hong Kong, where we were now beginning to learn about things that were happening there, where every year or a few years previous there'd been a bit of an uprising, and the troops had been called in to quell a few riots. And I always remember the training then to now was, you know, really, really different. We even had what we did was form a box of a platoon, and this was the riot squad. We would carry batons instead of rifles, and there would be an officer at the front. Behind him would be two infantrymen with a banner. And on the banner was written in bold words, "Stop or we shoot." And we would march to where the supposed riot was, or where we had to quell, halt. And we also had a bugler with us as well. And all what he would do was give three sharp blasts on his bugle to try and raise the attention of the rioters. And then the banner would be unfolded and hoisted in the air. Stop while we shoot, and then it was taken down. The officer in command, the platoon commander, who was Lieutenant, our platoon commander, I think it was Lieutenant Anderson as well at the time, and he would have a megaphone with him, which he would talk into to the crowd and try to quell them and quiet them down and warn them that if they didn't stop rioting, then there was going to be trouble. So we also had a snatch squad, in the riot squad, where they would, if there was a ringleader, he would be pointed out, and this snatch squad of two or three lads would run and retrieve the leader from the crowd and bring him back and put him in the squad. So really, when I look back now, it was quite not funny, but it was the methods used then were so quaint. But this was that Dane as well, and of course from there this sort of method was used in Northern Ireland right at the beginning as well, so it was in good stead for us. So we
did you have crowds of your other soldiers
acting as the detours, right. And I mean some of them were a bit robust, and if there was any battles that had happened before then, or somebody had a chip on the shoulder against something, then this was the time to get their own back, you know. And it was sometimes it did get a bit rough, so but otherwise you know, I'm pleased there was nothing like water cannons or anything like that then. Otherwise, it would have been a riot, I'm sure. But this was the main thing, the riot squad. So that was what we were getting trained for to do in Hong Kong. The other things was we got a few films again on what to do, what not to do. They said there would be certain bars, there's loads of bars there that would be out of bounds, and some of the Chinese girls were just waiting for us to get there to take our money off us and show us a good time and everything like that. And of course for us youngsters, well, this was all great. We couldn't wait then, this whetted our appetite really, really much. And at that time as well, of course, what was going on was the Vietnam War, and we knew that the American servicemen were based or went there for their rest and recuperation into Hong Kong as well. And some of the old soldiers in the battalion who had been there before, many years before, and they were saying, well, I tell you what will happen, the Americans will have all the money, they'll have all the best places, and they'll hog the bars and everything like that. But we weren't worried about that. We said, you're right, we'll be pleased when we leave Barney Castle and get on the plane and get into our new ventures in Hong Kong. And
was that all basically that you did at Barney Castle?
Sorry?
Was that the basic activities you had at Barnard Castle?
No, we still did our normal training with mortars. We still had to clean them, and we did rifle training, and we were firing on the range as well. So the normal activities of the battalion were still kept up. We had the band there, so we had a few parades and marching drills and what have you. We kept them at fitness. We were taking on runs every now and again to clear the cobwebs out. So it was mainly a period of keeping the battalion happy and keeping our feet on the ground, waiting for the day to come before we were going to Hong Kong. And I think we got very little leave before we went to Hong Kong, and it was quite when it did dawn on us that we were going to Hong Kong for 3 years and there would be no leave from Hong Kong, it then dawned on us, well, we'll really be away for 3 years this time. And I think we only got at the most a week's leave, some only five days before we were shipped back or put on alert for Hong Kong. And of course for some of them, especially the ones with loved ones and that and families, it was a sad time. Because they knew that the married families wouldn't be going straight out there. They would be joining later. But for others who had girlfriends and things like that, of course, we had the usual pattern of them not coming back on the reporting day. So those happened as well. And of course, when we were hearing the stories of some of them, then it did sweep through all of us, really. And we thought, well, you know, I'm not married, and I, you know, but I've got a girlfriend, and it's going to be 3 years before I see her, if we see her again, because you know what happens when, if we go away, then I can't see many people waiting 3 years for you to come back again and just pick up the pieces again. But we got there, and like I said, it was a very short leave at home, and it was wasn't long before we were waiting at the station with all our kit and getting on the train ready to...
Was there a lot of absence without leaving from these young lads?
Not really. I mean...
or extended leave, whatever it was.
Extended leave. There was, I mean, a lot of them who had gone absent were only absent for a day or a few hours even, really. There was not... Very, very few were on... You know, just went away and didn't come back at all. And it was mainly through, like I said... cases of people just knowing that they were going to miss the families or the loved ones for 3 years. So
how long were you at Barnet Castle?
Yeah, we were there about 6 to 8 weeks, really. So it was kind of a good spell, you know. I mean, it was really, it didn't sound long, but the time flew over, and it wasn't long before we were, as I said, we did riot train. We were had all been trained for that. We'd packed our mortars up. We were still using 3-inch mortars. We knew there was going to be a big change very shortly, but we didn't know what the new mortar was going to be. The anti-tanks would take over new kit when we got to Hong Kong as well. So everything in the battalion was as it was in Berlin, really. The company stayed the same, and apart from we'd had to receive some more inoculations and things like that, and we'd been indoctrinated with these films on about you know, life in Hong Kong, we just got into the mode of getting ready for to embark there. So it was a good stay. But I enjoyed Barnet Castle. It was nice there. But I think the people of Barnet Castle were pleased to see us go in the end. There'd been a few fights in the town with the locals, as usual. But I suppose that happens everywhere when you've got as many young and unattached lads in a town the size of that. But the bars were good. The drink was good, the fish and chips were excellent, and we enjoyed our little break in Barnet Castle. Really nice.
Were you issued with tropical kit?
Yeah, we got we got our parade with the jungle, well, lightweight denims, as they were called, and shorts and putties came into effect then, and what have you, and we were issued with new epaulets as well, the Durham bugle was given more of them to put on with our new tropical kit and whatever. So it was a good time for us. There was something on every day, and you know, we really enjoyed it. But we also then had, although we knitted in Berlin with the battalion, we were also then known, we knew everybody in the battalion just as well, who to keep clear of, and who was telling lies and who was telling the truth. We knew some of the officers arrived, and who had been on secondment somewhere. We built the battalion up to full strength again in Barley Castle, and we got to know our platoon commanders, company commanders, and we had our talks with the commanding officer, and we were all set, and we couldn't wait to get to Hong Kong.
Was it the same CO as you had in Berlin?
Yes, he did come for a child, but he wasn't there very long.
What was his name again?
Colonel... What was his name again? It would come to us later on. Big moustache. He'll come to us then, later on.
And had there been any changes from your point of view with your officers from the Berlin ones?
We'd There's a couple of the Mortimer had left, and we'd recruited another two, and of course they were arranged for a training cadre to be trained in the Mortimer Town. And of course, the other thing is, with the support companies that we had, the anti-tanks, recce platoon, mortar platoon, they were also told that, all right, they were specialists in their own field with the type of weapon they were used. They were also expected to, at any time, be able to take over as an infantryman soldier in any of the other platoons as well. So we had to keep our training up with the normal people as well on the range and what have you. But on the whole, we were Mortimer, and that was what we actually liked the most, and that's what we did a lot of training for. So we knew that in Hong Kong we would be able to fire live there as well. So we kept our skills up in training as well.
Did they give you any lectures on the social strata in Hong Kong? You know, the rich, the poor, what have you, that kind of thing.
Well, they told us about the lie of the land. I mean, I expected Hong Kong, when we talked of Hong Kong being a very, you know, a big place, you know, something like the size of the UK, and we all did as well, you know. We didn't realise how small a place it was, you know. We were told it would be in a place called Kowloon, and it was separated by a stretch of water to Hong Kong Main Island, where we would be doing some of our duties, because it was the base of the governor of Hong Kong. And part of our duties was to guard him as well. So we would be expected to provide a ceremonial guard on Hong Kong Island as well. And there was a ferry between the two islands to ship us there and back. And this ferry was run like a taxi, really. It was there 24 hours a day. It was just going backwards and forwards. Hong Kong, a very busy hive of activity for 24 hours as well. We were told that the Gurkhas were out there, and they were in one of the other barracks as well, close to where our barracks would be at Kowloon. And the other things was the airport, we would be landing at Kai Tak Airport, and it was a unique airport in as much as the planes landing and taking off, the runway led out to sea. It was built on the sea, and when we did land there, I remember I was looking out the window and said, well, we can't be down yet, I can see the sea there. But the runway actually led out to the sea. But the most frightening thing, of course, was that the skyscrapers in Hong Kong meant that the pilot had a hell of a job to manoeuvre the plane onto the runway for to begin with. And there was times when the plane was coming round, we said, well, you know, he's going to go into the side of the mountain or hit the top of one of these skyscrapers. It was a very hair-raising airport for to land in and take off. And I think at the time they said that the pilots were given extra money whenever they landed at Kai Tak Airport because of the danger and the difficulty they had with getting the plane on the runway. But of course, I mean, then Hong Kong was it's a big shipping magnet place. There was a hive of activities and all kinds of people, tourists, businessmen and women and all kinds. So the planes were, you know, landing and taking off every other minute of the day.
What time did you or date did you leave Barnet Castle?
We it was quite reasonable. I think we set off somewhere at about 10 o'clock in the morning, taking in lorries down to the small station there in companies, so many at a time, and then from there we got the train, went to Durham station, where the bigger train was waiting for to take us to the airport. And we were, as I said, by then, with the lorries being there, of course our kit bag and our new kits and suitcases were all labelled, and everything was already, you know, put on the train and everything for us. So the only thing we were carrying really was our personal kit, and that was it.
Were you in uniform?
No, we weren't. We were in civilian clothes. So that was the other strange thing, because we were told that we would be travelling in civilian clothes, but we had to make sure our passports were with us and our identifications were carried with us at all times, because we had to refuel somewhere, and for some reason or other they wouldn't allow us to travel to Hong Kong in military uniform. So I don't know yet why that was, but we did go in civilian clothes. So it was, you can imagine all the seeing all these men with you know, different form of clothes going to the station and getting on these trains, and then of course the plane for to go to Hong Kong, and the flight was. It was over 24 hours it took us before we got there anyway. A very boring, and we were pleased when, as I said, we knew we were getting close to Kai Tak Airport for our new venture, 3 years in Hong Kong.